Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Energy, the ambition for net zero by 2050. What is to be done? Renewables is the word, but therein lies the story. I welcome Professor Rafael Almeida. He is writing in Nature magazine. Importantly, he's an assistant professor in the School of Earth, Environmental, and Marine Science at the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley. Writing in Nature of a new approach to renewables, it's called photovoltaics. It's a made-up word from floating solar panel. However, Rafael, congratulations. You and your colleagues in the premier peer-reviewed magazine on the planet Earth, Nature. What you're proposing seemed at first strikingly practical-minded, and then again I began to ask myself, why didn't they think of this before? So let's talk about solar panels. Right now, solar panels are displayed, I know, out west in California in a desert environment. You tell me there are other parts of the planet where they're deployed in agriculture. I have heard that they're talking about using them in urban environments, which right now are made up of concrete and reflect back all the heat. However, look, what you recommend floating the solar panels on reservoirs. What attracted you to that idea? I know there's talk in Brazil, there's legislation in Brazil, there's building in Indonesia, but how did you arrive at this with your colleagues? Good evening to you, Rafael. Yeah.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you about floating solar. Photovoltaics is a word that is tricky to say. That's something that is emerging. What motivated us in the first place was to put together a perspectives piece, because that's something that is emerging worldwide. Everyone's asking this question, like, why haven't we thought about this before? And as we speak today, we'll see that there are trade-offs. Like everything, every energy decision has trade-offs. There's rarely free lunch in the electricity sector. So deserts have a lot of sunshine and they don't have much competition for land use, but there may be complications with logistics. Rooftops are a good option, but there may be issues in terms of scale. Another technology that is emerging is the co-location of solar power and agriculture. So we have food underneath solar panels, but plants may not like that shade that much. So there's a trade-off there as well, where food production may be reduced, but that's going to vary geographically and according to the crops that we're using and things like that. And scientists are only starting to understand what are the trade-offs.
I understand that it was striking to me, excuse me, Rafael, that solar panels change air patterns overhead, change a local weather, so you have a microclimate that's adjusted by solar panels?
That is something that if there's some evidence from new scientific papers that if we cover large swaths of land in deserts, that's going to change air circulation patterns that may have consequences for climate on larger scales. So that's when we're talking about, because every solution that we need to think about in terms of decarbonizing our economy, that means increasing electricity generation from solar or wind or renewables in ways that are monumental. So that when we think about placing large arrays of solar on deserts, that has consequences for air circulation.
All right, let's get to reservoirs. We all can picture them. They're above dams, for example, in the Hoover Dam. And I don't see anything wrong with this, except for you raise the questions about how it changes the ecosystem underneath the floating solar panels. You do have the energy grid attached to the dam that's attached to the reservoir. That's all very convenient. Is this an explanation for why Brazil is eager to experiment with this? Because they have plenty of sunshine and plenty of reservoirs.
Yes, that's precisely it. And that's one huge co-benefit of floating solar power. When you can couple that to existing hydropower infrastructure, the grid is already present. It's easier to transfer energy to other places. And that's in part why Brazil has about 60% of the electricity in Brazil comes from hydropower. There's reservoirs everywhere. That's why Brazil has been thinking about floating solar as well. But as you mentioned, that has consequences. Like you're floating, you are putting solar arrays on top of reservoirs. That's going to create some shades, and then there's going to be less light in reaching that reservoir water column.
The cost, everybody leans forward when you come to renewables. The cost in comparison to what? So let's talk about other renewables before we apply cost to photovoltaics. Wind power, I understand, you've not studied in nature, but you certainly hear the stories of damage to the habitats because it damages the birds. It's a frightening situation where birds are constantly being run into wind towers. There are other disturbances that have to do with the fact that the wind doesn't always blow. And also, the other renewables, solar panels, we've heard them talked about. We're talking about them now. It's said to be very expensive and having to do with the economics of solar panels. Are floating solar panels more expensive than regular solar panels? What's the gap?
Well, and I must say, I'm not an economist. I work with economists. But what I can read from reports and what I see about the sector, it's an emerging technology where the costs are still a little higher than that for land-based solar. You need the floats to have that infrastructure. There's like the mooring lines that are going to make sure that you have that in place. There are some challenges, infrastructure challenges that need to be solved when you place solar infrastructure over water. So right now, the World Bank estimates that it's about 5% more expensive than land-based solar. But as it gains scale, the trend is that it will become cheaper. There are advantages to it. For example, you don't need, or in many cases, if a hydropower owner is developing a floating solar array, they don't need to spend money with land acquisition. That's one positive aspect of it that may decrease costs. But there, since it's an emerging technology, it's still a little more expensive. But as it advances, I feel like it's going to get more attractive from an economic point of view.
Well, energy these days, Rafael, much in the news, you know, alternative sources everywhere. It's not just about net zero 2050. It's about how we're going to heat our homes in the winter of 23. So Brazil's gone through this political argument, and they have legislation now that permits it to happen. What were the reservations in Brazil? It couldn't have been about land use. Was it a question of installation, question of cost? How was it argued?
With essentially what happened is that the legislation was tweaked in ways that favored and made it easier for photovoltaics to be a thing in Brazil. Because before, like for hybrid generation, when you're operating a hydropower plant and a floating solar plant, that the environmental licensing and the licensing to get the permit and to sell that energy, what the legislators did there was to make things easier for that for them to sell that energy that is generated by floating solar.
And in making it easier, did it need subsidies? Because many of these renewables need subsidies. Hydropower doesn't, but solar and wind are associated with subsidies. Is that true in Brazil?
I don't think it's being subsidized at this point. I think a big step forward was to for legislators to recognize photovoltaics or floating solar hybrid hydropower, floating solar power plants as one type of generation that they call hybrid generations. So when you have that in the legislation, when you have a set of rules that investors can follow, that helps in terms of confidence. The business becomes less risky, right? When a series of regulations are set forward in terms of they know what they will face. And that's essentially what happened there. It's growing. It's still going to expand, but there is the fact that there is some guidelines from the government side that that helps attract investors and towards floating solar in Brazil. And I think that's going to be the case elsewhere.
You've written before the pandemic, you published in Nature an article that you linked me to in your article now about hydropower in Brazil. This is a growing story for Brazil. So that makes them disposed towards it. They're going to increase their reservoir space. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. In part, Brazil has a lot of water. Like about, just to give you an example, about 20% of all water that from rivers that flow into the ocean come from the Amazon River. In South America, and that runs through the northern part of Brazil. And then that paper that you're alluding to, it was focused on hydropower and how to strategically design hydropower portfolios, like where to site dams to minimize effects of dam construction. And Brazil is a big country. There's more than 200 million people that live in Brazil, so it will need a lot of energy going forward. Hydropower is the dominant source, and Brazil know how to do that. But so going forward, that always keeps being an option in terms of expanding energy generation in Brazil. But there are serious environmental impacts associated with hydropower. So I think that one option is to select and have careful studies. Understanding what reservoirs are promising in terms of floating solar so that we could avoid building new dams, which are catastrophic from an environmental perspective, by adding new capacity via floating solar power. So instead of building a new dam, you could use part of that reservoir to have floating solar panels that will operate jointly with the hydropower dam site and provide a less intermittent power source to the grid. There are many challenges that engineers will have, to navigate in terms of how to make that feasible, like over a large scale. But that's a promising alternative to minimize the need to pursue more hydropower dams to get to net zero.
I learned from your article in Nature that covering 10% of the world's hydropower reservoirs with floating solar panels would result in nearly 4,000 gigawatts of solar capacity, equivalent to the electricity generation capacity of all fossil fuel plants and operations worldwide. So there's great promise. However, what can go wrong and why when we come back? I'm speaking with Rafael Almeida, writing in Nature magazine with his colleagues about the future for energy generation from renewables. Rafael is an assistant professor in the School of Earth, Environmental, and Marine Sciences, University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Life with CIDP can be tough, but the Thrive Team, a specialized squad of experts, helps people living with CIDP make more room in their lives for joy. Watch Rare, Well Done.
An all-new reality series, Rare, Well Done, offers help and hope to people across the country who live with the rare disease CIDP. Watch the latest episode now, exclusively on RareWellDone.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.